Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's lynda.com/know-how. This week on Know-How, we're giving you the knowledge to prank your friends. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twit show where we build, break, and upgrade. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballasaire. I'm sorry, but Cranky Hippo is out this week. He's preparing a NASCAR racer for their Doge entry. But we've got a pretty decent show for you today. Now, I know that there's going to be a lot of April foolery going on in the very near future, and we don't typically pay attention to it, but we thought we should at least give you some survival skills. Specifically, we're going to give you some of the knowledge that you already have, but show you how you could use it to play a prank or two. But before we do that, I thought that maybe we should talk a little bit about an upgrade, a part coming into the market that I'm actually really, really impressed to see. Now, we all know that video performance, especially in games, is dependent on the video card. It used to be dependent on the CPU, but those days are long past. You can have an all-powerful CPU, you can have a lot of memory, but if you have a dog as a video card, your frame rate's just not going to do so well. That's why I was impressed to see that NVIDIA is releasing a brand new entry in their Titan series. Now, you may have seen the GTX Titan, the black, but now they have the GTX Titan Z. Now, this is an Uber video card. This is essentially a supercomputer on a PCI Express format computer that fits inside your computer. Now, the cool thing about this is it has 5,760 cores. It also has 12 gigabytes of DDR5 memory and a 384-bit memory bus, which means that you're going to get your frames to and from the processor as fast as possible, rendered and then pushed down into your computer and over to your monitor. It can also process a total of, now get this, 8 teraflops. That's 8 teraflops. Of calculations every second, all the while the bus is running around 700 megahertz, which is interesting because the previous version of this card had the bus running at about 889 to 980 megahertz, which means that you could speed up these processors even more and get more supercomputing power out of them if you actually wanted to. Now, it's not going to come cheap. Unfortunately, right now it's going to be running pretty close to $3,000, which means this is not really a video gaming card. I mean, if you were to happen upon one of these and drop it into your computer, we could probably finally play Crysis at full resolution. But more likely than not, what this is for are for video professionals. Anyone who is using a video suite like Final Cut or even, say, Adobe Premiere, which uses the power of those CUDA cores, is going to find that their rendering experience is blown through the roof. Furthermore, this would be an excellent card for cryptocurrency mining. Now, I'm pretty sure we're not going to get one in just for that, but it is nice to dream. And yes, very much so. It is a dream. Something I think Brian would be proud of if he were here today instead of preparing for that all-important race. Now, let's get to the pranks. Now, you remember a few episodes ago, in fact, in episode 81, I showed you how to speed up your DNS. The way that we did that was by using a third-party DNS or by changing the host file on your computer so that you didn't have to require a DNS. You didn't have to actually go out to the internet to find the IP address of the server you were trying to reach, or changing the settings in your router to do essentially the same thing. Well, that's all well and good, and that will get you better performance, and that will make sure that your connection stays consistent. But you could also use that little bit of tweakery for the power of pranking. Now, let me say up front, don't do this unless you know someone will take it well. This is something incredibly annoying, incredibly irritating. In fact, I'm going to say most of you shouldn't do this. And if you do it, and if you do get in trouble, please don't tell them that Father Robert told you to do it, because yeah, I don't like those phone calls. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to start out with the host file. If you could go ahead and drop over to my computer, Alex, you may remember this. This is a host file. This is the file inside of Windows. And I actually, in episode 81, I also showed you how to do this in a Mac, but I'm just going to show you Windows right now because it's a little easier. This is the file that allows you to locally assign a IP address to any given address for a website. So www.twit.tv, www.twitter.com, whatever that's going to be, you could locally assign it right here so that your computer automatically knows where it needs to go when it's trying to look up an IP address. What we need to do in order to be able to change it, we need to go, and if you drop back to my computer full screen, we're going to go to Start, All Programs, Notepad, and on Notepad, you need to run it as administrator. So hover over Notepad, right-click, and then go Run as Administrator. It's going to give you the Notepad program, but now the Notepad program is running as administrator, which means it can change an important system file, which is what you're about to do. Now go to File, Open, and then you need to drop into the C drive, Windows, System 32, Drivers, where are you? There you are. And then Etsy. And in Etsy, you're not going to see anything. That's because right now Notepad isn't showing you all files. So click this little menu for text documents. Say, I want to see all files. Now open Hosts, this very first one. This gives you the file that will allow you to assign your IP addresses as needed. Now, come back to me real quick. A real pro tip here is you need a way to find the IP address of the site that you're trying to send to. And the easiest way to do that is to use one of two programs that are built into pretty much every operating system. The first one is called Ping. The second one is called NSLookup. I prefer to use Ping just because it gives me sort of the forward-facing server, but a lot of people do like NSLookup because it shows you all the servers that are associated with that address. Let me show you how that works. Go ahead and drop back to my computer. If you go to Start, Command, you'll get a command window. Now if you type, say, ping, let's say irc.twit.tv, and now you've got the number that your computer actually goes to. This is the IP address, the IPv4 address that your computer will go to if you typed irc.twit.tv in a browser. Again, the other way to do that is nslookup. The same thing, irc.twit.tv. And it gives you the same thing. It's not trying to see if it's alive. It's actually looking through the database to see, well, what IP addresses are associated with this particular server. Now that I have that address, what I can do is I can use that 174.37.23.130 to reassign any website. Now, just to show you that we're all on the up and up here, let me jump into a Facebook page right now, facebook.com. And it shows you that my computer is going to Facebook just like it should. Now what we're going to do is we're going to use the format, IP address, and then the website that you want to redirect. In this case, I already know the IP address of the Twit IRC server, and I know I want to redirect Facebook. Let's say I want people to stop using Facebook and instead use one of the best chatting platforms on the internet. If you look at my computer, all I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and type that in, which is 174.37.23.130, and then facebook.com. And what will happen is if I go ahead and jump into my browser here and I go to Facebook, instead of going to Facebook, it's going to resolve back to the Twit IRC channel. Now, this is a cool trick because it's really, really simple. All you need to do is get them away from the computer for just a bit, and then you'll be able to reset their host file. Something else you need to know about this is if you've got one of these websites that has multiple front-facing addresses, like, for example, Facebook, which is facebook.com or www.facebook.com, you need to use all those addresses. You need to redirect them all, otherwise the prank won't be quite effective. The other thing you need to remember is that there are some websites, like, for example, twit.tv. You can't redirect to twit.tv because if you just type in the IP address for twit.tv, it won't get you to the web server. That's one of the protections that we use to keep from getting DDoSed off the net. So make sure to test it. Type in that IP address into your browser to make sure that that is actually going to work before you do it. Now, there is another bend to this trick that we're going to show you in just a bit. I'm going to show you how you can use your DDWRT router to do the same thing without ever touching anyone's computer. But before that, I think, Alex, we've got a little something-something from Brian, right? Did he ever record that?
Hold on.
You know what? He said he left it around here somewhere. He wanted to give us a know-how on some old machinery or you know, the latest and the greatest.
I don't know. I don't remember that.
Well, you know, he said he left it on the know-how. Oh, wait. Whoa. Okay. Well, this must be it. It says for Padre, so... Whoa. Okay. Well... And this will fit right into the TriCaster, right?
It was a Betacam?
It must be high definition.
I think we got something that we can do.
I'm gonna go ahead and plug it in right over here. Can you route this from the TriCaster?
Yeah, I think I got it right here.
All right, I have no idea what this is, but let's go ahead and run it.
Hi there. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Brian Brunet, and occasionally on Know How, we have what we like to call know-it-alls come on the show. And today we have Alex Gumpel. How you doing, Alex?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. So you're our guest expert, and what would you like to show us today?
Well, I'm going to show you how to upgrade the memory in your Macintosh computer.
Okay. That sounds like it'd be something pretty handy.
Yeah, I figured a lot of people have Macintoshes, and upgrading your memory can increase your performance for many applications.
Right. And it's not something too difficult for average viewers?
Well, that depends. So it depends on what kind of Macintosh you have. Mm-hmm. You have a modular one, which is fairly simple to do, because that's ready for expandability. But then there's the compact Macintosh units, and those are a little trickier to get in. So I figured we'll start with the modular one, and it's the easy, and then we'll...
All right, let's bring out the model.
So actually, before we get to bringing those out, we have two Macintosh memory upgrade kits.
Oh, wow, look at these guys.
Bring those over there. So these are the single inline memory modules, or SIMs. Mm-hmm. We have a set of each of these is... which one is this? Okay, so these are 4 megabytes each, and this is 1 megabyte each. So we got 4 megs and then 16 megs here.
Okay.
Now, a quick and dirty way to determine the capacity of one of these SIMs, and it's not always the case, but on some of them, if you look on the chips, I don't know if you can see this, Brian.
Wow, that's pretty close.
There's a number down here. We probably won't be able to get it on camera with these standard definitions.
No, just take our words for it, folks.
But it says there's 1,000 there.
Yeah.
That means about 1 megabyte. So the chip says 1,000. That means the SIM is going to be 1 meg.
Now, this isn't
this
standard.
This says 4,000, and so this is 4 megs.
4 megs, okay.
Per SIM.
All right, so we'll be upgrading from what? What do we have here?
Let's take a look at what we have. So over here we have the Macintosh 2CX, which is a standard workstation modular computer system.
Very stylish.
So it's fairly simple to open because that's by design. One thing is you may have a security screw back here, so we'll have to remove that first. Okay. So you just take your standard Phillips screwdriver or whatever it happens to be. I'll just kind of get that in there. Mm-hmm. And turn that.
Now, are there any safety precautions we should make our viewers aware of before we start this?
Well, let's just crack this open quick.
Just real simple.
There we go.
Oh, wow.
As you can
look
see,
at that.
It just pops right off.
That's good design, right?
So before you start touching anything inside, you'll probably want to use a wrist strap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very simple. You just kind of put that on your wrist.
There you go, yeah.
And then you want to clip...
That stuff's the static charge.
Right, and then you want to clip this to something metal that's hopefully grounded, and okay. We just look for...
I'm sure we have something under the desk, maybe, or...
You don't really need it.
We're going crazy
today. Just
kind
of be careful. Just, you know, you want to make sure you're...
Don't do this in your socks, right?
Right. Don't do this, standing on carpet in socks, and it'll be fine.
Okay.
So if we take a look on the inside of the unit here, we have here are the memory banks. We have the bank A and bank B. And right now, A is already filled with some RAM. And these are 1 megabyte each, so there's 4 megs of RAM total in this computer at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the 2CX can go up to 128 megabytes of RAM, but, you know, that's very expensive. So I only have a certain
number. Don't have to tell me.
So we're going to put the 16 megs that we have here with the 4 meg SIMs. And because this has two banks, we can just add the second bank full of that, and then that's upgrade. So we don't have to actually remove the originals.
Very nice. Very nice.
With the banks, each one has to be, they have to be the same. All the SIMs in one bank need to be the same.
Okay.
So we have 4 1 megabyte SIMs here. We're going to put 4 4 megabyte SIMs in the other one.
Got it.
So they have to kind of stay even like that. So we just take our SIMs right here and just kind of, if we got the overhead shot, we just kind of stick that right in there.
Just nice and easy.
And then
you don't even need a tool, huh? You just snap them in there?
Yep, it just snaps right in.
Wow.
Kind of put them in at an angle. Of course, when you're on television, this is a lot more difficult.
How much altogether does this give us in this machine?
This will give us, so we have 4 megs in there. What's going on with this one? We have 4 megs already, and we're adding 16, so this will give us 20 megabytes total.
It's getting hot here. This is getting very warm. It must be these studio lights.
What's wrong with this stupid thing?
You turn on the cameras.
We'll pretend that one goes in, and I'll just try another one here. How about that? I bet there's something just wrong with that. Watch some stuff.
Just that slot right there?
Stupid little... Boy, this is interesting. Normally it just pops right in.
Yeah, quite the conundrum we have here.
It's like it's all... normally it just pops right in. It's great. So for now, we'll just stick those in there. And then that's all you got to do.
And then you put the top back on. Don't forget your safety screw, right?
Yeah, why don't you... here you go. Why don't you screw that in there?
Oh, boy. Okay.
Here's the screwdriver.
So now, what kind of performance increase can we expect on this?
Well, so we're going from 4 megs to 20. And it depends on the application that you're using. If you're using Photoshop or Illustrator, you can have larger files.
KidPix is one of my favorites.
KidPix probably doesn't utilize too much. It probably can't utilize a lot because it's designed for lower-end computers. So with the modular Mac, it's simple. You just pop them in like that, and there you go.
I'm glad you came on the show. That's an easy way for any home user to upgrade the RAM on your Macintosh, and you'll see some nice speed boosts. So we have something else?
So now we're going to do the compact Macintosh. Now, this one is a little more tricky. So right here we have a Macintosh SE.
Wow, that looks very lightweight.
And the SEs are very common Mac. You know, these are like the Boeing 737s of the Macintosh world. So many people have these. They're pretty much the most affordable ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to set it on its... on its front like that.
Okay.
And normally you should go to the dealer to get this done, and there's certain specific tools that you need to open one of these. But we don't have those, so we're just going to kind of make do with the tools that we have.
Yeah.
So you need a Torx T15 bit.
And where were you able to find this?
Oh, we have a toolkit somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere in the studio.
I was able to borrow that. So it's good. And you want a nice long
you're going to need the length,
Yeah. So inside the handle here, I don't know if we could take a look. There are two screws, and we need to get both of those out. So you want to take your thing and put it in there, and you should be able to just get it out, sort of. Oh, there we go. Okay, all right.
Are they in there pretty tight?
Yeah, a little bit. And just kind of want to keep turning that. Excuse me.
Yeah. So how much RAM did this computer come with originally?
Macintosh SEs typically come with 1 megabyte of RAM, and that's what this has too.
Okay. And are we having trouble getting
a little trouble getting that out. Why don't you give that a try? I'm going to run and get my other tool
I
know it works.
I'm going to give this a shot here. It shouldn't be too difficult. I'm sure everyone at home won't have this much trouble, unless you're trying to film it in front of an audience live. Then this happens. Things break and doesn't work right. Oh man!
So I have my own tool that usually works for this.
Yeah.
And I kind of do a cheat. So I got just a regular screwdriver. It's a driver. It's not. It's
let's
got
try
a
that.
Modular bit. And then I have a little extender. And we just kind of pop that into there and put the Torx head on. Mm-hmm. And this will just kind of barely work. It's a little kludgy, but it seems to do the job.
Let's just see if we can pop those bad boys out of there.
Oh, it feels like it's actually already loosened.
Oh.
Maybe it is. Well, let's try the other one. All right, this one is tight. Okay, here we go.
So the modular design with computers, it makes it simple to take these apart, and for most people, not us.
Well, with modular Macintoshes, that's true, but with these compact ones,
the
Apple would like you to go to your local Apple dealership and have them do
certified
it.
Certified dealer.
There we go. Okay, we got the two screws out. We'll just take that there, and then we got two more screws on the back plate here, and we'll just kind of get those out.
Can we take a close look at that? Yeah, there we go.
It's right there. I just got to unscrew that.
Well, there we go. That wasn't too difficult.
And one more.
Zip, zip.
Yep. Now, most home users may not have an actual Torx bit. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's kind of there so people don't really tamper with it unless you really know what you're doing, because theoretically, if you have a Torx driver, you kind of know what you're doing.
Okay. Yeah, I'll hang on to those for you. Promise not to lose them. Maybe.
All right, now, depending on if you've ever opened your Macintosh or not, it might be a little hard to get it out.
Okay.
The actual repair people, they have a tool that it's you basically kind of put it in the little crack there and pry it open.
Is there some sort of adhesive that holds this?
No, it's just in there.
Okay.
What you can do if you can't get it get the thing off is you can take like a flathead screwdriver and kind of put it in there and kind of twist it a bit. You just want to be careful that you don't damage the plastic when you do that.
Okay.
But this one, I think, is...
Can we just slide
this one just pops right off like that.
Oh, look at that.
You kind of pull it off, and then there you go.
Ooh.
Well, that was interesting.
It, like, reverse exploded. We do seem to have a bit of dust in here.
Right, of course. This is a workhorse computer. Right. You're going to have dust and some stuff in there. Now, because this has a CRT in it, a built-in monitor, be very careful not to touch any of that.
That could
CRTs
be a little
are very dangerous and you can electrocute yourself if it's charged. Right now, this particular device is probably discharged, hasn't been plugged in a while.
Okay.
So it's fine. But if you just unplug your thing and you open it up, you don't want to touch it.
Okay, and ideally, so that's a safety note.
And if you have a discharge tool and you know how to use it, you should use that before working in there. I don't happen to have one on me, so I can't do that, but I know that it's probably discharged. And
we'll see how this goes.
It should be fine.
All right, so what's our next step here?
All right, so if we just kind of take a look at the components here. So you got the screen there. Mm-hmm. You have the analog board here, which has got the power supply and some of the monitor electronics in it. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, the power supply is down over here. And then the logic board sits on the bottom. That's basically where all the brains are.
And that's what holds the RAM?
And then you have the two drives here. This particular SC is a dual floppy model. So you have the two floppy drives. You might have a hard drive in there, depending on which one you have. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple.
So the first thing you want to do is there's a shield over here. It's basically a piece of foil. You want to just kind of pull that off, and there that exposes the logic board.
Wow, look at that. That's pretty neat.
So the RAM, of course, is on the logic board, and we have to get that out. And that can be a little tricky with this. So you can see right here there's the power cable. And now that's going into a connector, and you kind of have to just kind of get your hand in there.
Okay.
And you want to reach underneath the connector with your finger, and you'll feel a little clip. You want to lift up on the clip
and kind of just
pull the thing out. And be careful not to touch the CRT.
Right.
Boy, it's a tricky one, ain't it? Get that. There we go.
There.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's loose. And then you have the two drive cables. So if you have floppy drives, it's just the two floppy cables. If you have a hard drive, then you got a big SCSI cable you got to get rid of.
Hmm.
So you just pull those off. And that's
no big deal.
That's that. So then you just kind of lift up on the logic board, kind of get the clips
nice
off.
And gentle.
And now if you see on the side here, there's these three clips, and you kind of see that the piece is kind of, it's a like a locking mechanism there.
Yeah, little holsters for it.
So if you pull that to the right distance like that, you can just push that out.
Ah, so. There you go. And so there's only two cables that connect it to the rest of the PC, huh?
And one more, which is right here, and this is the speaker cable.
Just
pull that out.
Oh. All right.
Now we have the logic board.
Oh, and I see this is our existing RAM SIM.
That's right, Brian.
Okay.
So if we look at the logic board, we have the four SIM slots, and right now we have with 1 megabyte of RAM, each of these is 256 kilobytes of memory.
Wow.
So
that's not bad.
We want to replace that with 1 megabyte SIMs, creating a total of 4 megabytes of RAM. The SE can only take up to 4 megs of RAM. Can't take any more.
That's a hardware limitation?
So the biggest SIMs that you can put in there is 1 megabyte, so that's what we have.
Hmm.
So to take the old ones out, just kind of
4 megabytes, that seems like overkill, but
press the clips off, out, and pull the memory, and it just pops out like so. So I want to do that 4 times.
There you go.
Why don't you give that a try, Brian?
Yeah, sure. This looks like fun. All right.
Let me just...
I think I broke something. It's okay?
Okay. So, see the little clip here? You want to push that out?
I should have pushed that out before. There we go. Wow, that comes out even easier.
Just like that.
Instead of me just ripping it out. And I think some of the clips fell over here. It's all right. We'll pick those up later.
That's okay.
Hold them in, right?
We can take this to our authorized service technician and have them replace it.
I think there's one
down the
street.
So, put the new SIMs in. You just take it, and you basically do the opposite of that. So, you just stick it in to the thing, kind of at an angle.
You don't need to push the tabs out?
And then, nope. The tabs are angled, so you just push down on the SIM, and that will lock it in place.
Okay. Can I try another one?
Yes.
Can I try the one? This one doesn't have clips, so it should just sit right in there now. Oh, boy. That should be okay, right?
We'll pretend that one's okay.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
For the sake of television.
These computers are made pretty heartily, so... I don't think it'll be an issue. It'll just be 3 megabytes of RAM, right?
Put the final one in. And that's in place. That's
wow.
Good.
I am really sorry about that.
And we'll just... And there you go. So now we have the replaced memory units.
Okay, can you show it for a close-up over there?
Leave that one over there.
Yeah, that's...
And there you go. It's,
no problem. Okay, so let's get it back in there.
All right, so to put it back in, we basically do the opposite of how we got it out. So you want to kind of line the board up. Take the
speaker cable?
Yes, the speaker cable. Mm-hmm. And clip that back onto the connector sitting next to the clock battery.
Mm-hmm.
Just stick that on. And now to put it in place, I'm going to leave this SIM off so it doesn't get jammed in there. We'll pretend that it's in. That bit that came out, the kind of the little locking mechanism here, that's only on one side. So to put it back in, you want to first stick the edge over into the slots over here, just kind of just sideways.
And just slip it in there. Don't force anything like I did earlier.
Yes, don't force anything. And then you want to just line these pieces up again as it was earlier and stick that in like that. And now push down, but not quite all the way because we do still need to get the cables in.
Oh, right. We've got the power cable and the CRT monitor cable left, right?
No, it's the power cable and the 2 floppy drive cables.
Well, there you go. See, I would have gotten it wrong.
So probably it's easier to start with the power cable.
Hmm.
So you just want to kind of, you probably have to push the logic board down and in a bit. And actually, you could actually put it in all the way. So there you go. So that's
maybe wait till you screw it down.
Yeah. And then you just kind of line that up. And you want to put your other hand on the opposite side of the board to create some counter pressure. And now it's clipped in place and that's locked. And then you want to just replace the floppy cables back in their places, like so. And
head's in the way.
Like so. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. So now the motherboard is connected. So that's pretty much it. And then we take our shield.
Shielding, yeah.
Stick that back on where it was. It just kind of fits right over the connectors like that. And now...
Simple.
What can be a little bit tricky, but it's pretty easy, is putting the case back on. Now, I know the instinct is to just, put it on like that. But you want to be very careful that the sides here don't get in between the shield and the chassis here.
Before you put that on, though, are there signatures inside of that?
There are. They're engraved... embossed, engraved signatures of the Macintosh design.
Oh, that's what everybody wants on their computers.
Yeah, but they all have that. It's a common thing.
Okay. So
it's a little Easter egg that they built into the case.
Continue.
So the best way to put this on is because how the shield is folded this way, you want to just kind of start on the side.
Makes sense.
And then rotate it over like that and slide over. Make sure nothing gets caught. And you stick it in. Now, you also want to be careful that over here, that the side piece doesn't do something like that and go off the edge. You want to make sure that it goes in underneath and locks it like that.
Well, perfect.
It shouldn't explode like that. I'm not sure what that was.
That was a technical difficulty that we had.
And you take the screws and you put them back on using your Torx screwdriver.
Oh, right. The thing. I think I have the torch. Wait. They're in my pocket. Do you remember the silver ones or the black ones?
So the black ones go on this side, and the silver ones go in the handle.
Perfect. Well, there you go.
So where's the other screwdriver?
Right here.
So why don't you go ahead and why don't you tighten these with that, and I'll tighten these.
Sure.
With this.
So just to reiterate to our audience, we've taken apart the Mac. We put the new, bigger SIMs in, and we'll be having 4 megabytes of RAM.
The larger capacity modules.
We'll probably notice a nice speed boost from these. And probably took us, what? We did all this in real time. What, about 10 minutes?
There's no editing here.
No editing. So really, that's a job you can do on the weekend. You know, if you have a spare hour, and you'll definitely notice the difference in performance, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you can take your old RAM and save it for, you may have another Macintosh you want to use the old memory in if sure. you buy it with less than what your SIMs you pulled out
yeah,
of the
Yeah,
don't
throw that stuff away.
Yeah, you want to always kind of save that stuff. You never know when you're going to want to use it again.
Okay, well, so thanks for coming on the show, Alex. I think that's about all the time we have for this segment. But yeah, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about your project or anything?
No, just if you have any questions, you can always go to your local Apple dealership and ask them about memory upgrade options, and they'll be happy to help you with that.
Great. All right. Well, I'd be happy to have you on the show again sometime soon. Back to you, Padre.
Wow, a piece of history there. I want to thank Brian Burnett and Alex Gumpel from that tape from 30 years ago showing us a way to really never, ever, don't ever upgrade your memory like that because then everything is broken. We also want to thank the Apple Museum here in the Silicon Valley for donating that Mac to us, which no longer works. All right, well, coming right up, we're going to show you an easier way to do that redirect trick if you're using a DDWRT-capable router. But before that, I thought this might be a nice time to thank our sponsor, Lynda. Now, if you're watching Know How, we know that you're a know-it-all. We know that you want to learn how to do things. You want to learn how to make. You want to learn how to program. You want to learn how to build a business, maybe. And that's why we're so happy to have Lynda.com as a sponsor of the Know-It-All crowd. Now, at Lynda.com, you get the premier online learning company. What do you want to learn? Photography, audio and video editing, software skills? With the easy-to-follow video tutorials on Lynda.com, you can learn at your own pace, on your own terms, from top industry experts. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover a variety of software, creative, and business skills. Now, for me, I have been all over their Python lessons. They have a series of videos that are dedicated to being up and running with the Raspberry Pi. Now, you know that here on Know How, we love the Raspberry Pi. It's an inexpensive platform that can do pretty much anything you tell it to do. But you need to learn how to program it. Otherwise, you're just installing other people's packages. Well, with Lynda.com, you can learn not just how to be up and running, but it will teach you the advanced skills, the things that you need to be able to turn your Raspberry Pi into, say, an ISS above device or a home automation device or a device that streams video and audio from the internet. It's all right there with Lynda.com. Lynda lets you improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up with technology with over 2,000 courses that are added again and again daily. Their new courses this week include Foundations of Programming, Programming for Kids, Up and Running with 3D Printing, Shooting a Photo Essay, Telling a Family Story, and UX Design Tools Photoshop. Instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields and expert teachers. They don't just teach. They don't just teach from a book. These are people who have actually done this for a living. And so you're getting the benefit of their years of experience. Lynda has high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios, which means that these aren't those homemade YouTube videos, which are great for the amount of knowledge that they give you, but you know, there's something about watching a video that has good audio or has a well-lit studio. You just want to watch it more. It helps you to learn the way you want to learn. Lynda has curated course content. Each Lynda.com course is carefully structured so that users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter for quick answers. They also have easy-to-follow videos that can help you find the answer you need by giving you in-video transcripts. That means that you don't have to jump around within a video to find the section that you're looking for. You could just search for the problem you're having, and they'll give you the piece of video that shows you the answer. It's really that easy. Lynda has courses for all experience levels that cover a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and so much more. They let you watch from your computer, your tablet, or mobile device. And one of my favorite pieces is that they let you switch between devices. Pick up from the chapter that you left off. Learn at your own pace, on your own device, at your own schedule, when you want, how you want. That's the promise of Lynda.com. Lynda.com now also has certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Lynda.com. Learn something new in 2014 with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. It's all at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of KnowHow. Now, I promised you that I was going to show you another way to do the DNS prank without having to jump onto someone's computer. It's a really cool way to redirect someone's web searches. But if you don't have access to someone's computer, but you do have access to the router, and if that router is running DDWRT, there is an exceptionally easy way to do the same thing. Now, if you jump to my computer over here, Alex, we're going to show you that I've got our DDWRT router up right now. This is what the interface looks like. You're going to see this anytime you log into one of these devices that has DDWRT installed. What you want to do is you want to go to services. And if you scroll down on services, you're going to find something that says DNS mask. All DNS mask does, it allows you to mask an entry on top of the results it's getting back from the DNS server. The format that you use is the address equals slash the website that you want to redirect slash the IP address that you want to redirect to. I'm going to use the example we had from the last prank. Address equals slash facebook.com/174.37.23.130. Now, before I apply this, I'm going to show you that right now, again, if I go to facebook.com, I'm going to get a regular result. It's going to jump me over to facebook.com, and everyone's happy and everyone's groovy. But jump back in here, and now let me apply that setting. And it's going to take a couple of seconds for DDWRT to apply it. And assuming that they're not using a third-party DNS on their computer, so they're not bypassing the local, it means that now if they go to Facebook.com, it's going to go to the Twit IRC channel. Now, here's the thing. Go ahead and come back to me, Alex. If you were watching this live, you saw a few of the foibles of trying to do this. My computers have been set up to not allow people to do this. I typically use third-party DNS providers, which means it's not using the host file and it's not using the local DNS server. I also have a couple of security features that prevent people from masking their DNS. I had to turn all that stuff off. Unfortunately, if you were watching the live stream, you saw that it doesn't always work. One of the things you're going to have to do is make sure that the person's not running any third-party DNS servers and also not running any security protocols on their computer that keep people from altering the host file or from removing valid requests from the DNS cache. That sounds like a lot to do, but if you have a person who isn't really that computer savvy, most likely they're just using the DHCP address that's coming to them from the router, which means that this trick is going to work just fine. Now, one bit of advice. Please, 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 if you're going to do this, eventually let the person off the hook. I know a couple of people who did this prank and they forgot to take it off and it escalated. And it got to the point where people were losing productivity time and eventually someone got fired. So again, please try this out. Make sure that you know how to do it. But if you're going to do it, eventually fess up. It is a prank. It's all in good humor. And we don't want anyone getting fired. Now, next week, Brian will be back, and we've got a doozy of an episode coming up for you. But before that, we'd like you to check out our show notes page. If you go to our show notes page on the Twit TV network, that's twit.tv/knowhow, KH, you're going to be able to find all of our episodes along with the show notes, including the notes on how to pull off these pranks. It's going to be spelled out for you in step-by-step instructions. It's one of the things that we do to make sure that you can do all of these tricks, all of these projects, all of these maker events on your own. Also, you could find us on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/knowhow, you'll find each individual video. And that's actually, it's a large community. It's, I believe we get anywhere from 3,000 to 100,000 views per video. Go ahead and check us out. Share us with your friends and see if maybe they want to get into the know-how spirit as well. Not only that, you can find us on our G Plus group. We do have a very active G Plus group. I'm actually proud of it. We've got over 6,000 users right now. And the thing that happens is whenever someone suggests a project, whenever someone has a question, whenever someone comes to us with a problem, it's usually not the hosts that give us the answers. It's our know-it-alls. It's the people in our G Plus group, which you can find by going to gplus.to/twitkh. It's one of the things that we try to get you involved with so that you can be part of know-how even when the show is not running. You can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ. So you can keep up with me in between the shows, find out what I'm doing on the Twit TV network, and overall see what's happening in the life of an Uber geek. Until then, until the next time, until Brian is back and Alex hopefully gets away from that Betamax VHS machine, I'm Father Robert Ballester, and now that you know, go do it.